Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Today I'm joined by cultural commentator Peter York for our weekly look at the art world. We'll be getting musical at Somerset House as they open up an archive of memorabilia owned by British rockers The Jam. We'll head to the Tate Britain for a retrospective of work by Barbara Hepworth and remember the life of satirical cartoonist Osbert Lancaster as a blue plaque is hung on the exterior of his childhood home. That's all coming up here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Peter York, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
To have you here. We've turned up the studio for you because it's wet outside.
But it's very wet.
You've come equipped.
I've come equipped, of course. Yes.
The awning of which august cultural institution in London are we going to hide under from the raindrops first? The Tate Britain, perhaps?
Tate Britain, in its Edwardian imperial marvellousness. And in Tate Britain, there are currently a Barbara Hepworth retrospective of some heft and importance, and it's the first one for, I don't know, 47 years, they say proudly. And it is wonderful. And I enjoyed it very much because it gets her out from under being the elemental poetess, you know, the sculptural poetess of the British countryside and the wet and all that stuff. And shows that she was on trend with the big European modernists. And then you go back to that, and she, you know, like all British between-war modernism, it's this funny, you know, what is it to be a big British artist? And one of the things I hadn't realised was that, like Henry Moore, she was a big British artist in the big world, and she, you know, she went out there, and she was Biennale material. She was collected by big foreign people. So not just a little British artist, but a big British artist. And she did lovely things, some of which I hadn't seen before. So there's in the first room, there's a marvellous infant that I assumed was bronze. And they'd said, oh, no, she does cutting, not casting. And you look closer and it's shiny, dark wood that looks like bronze. And it's a marvellous infant of about, I don't know, about 1930. And it's really ravishing, and it's a bit like Epstein and a bit like discovered figures, and it's
a bit funny as well.
I'd love to have it.
Yeah.
And then you go on through and through and through, and much is made of her collaboration with her hubby Ben Nicholson, another kind of Englishness, and the son of William Nicholson of all those posters and things, and them doing each other, so to speak, drawing each other into their things and working together. Actually quite attractive.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. You've got a couple of... You said before we switched on the microphones, I can't really leave a museum without buying all the books.
Yes, lovely books.
And you've got the show catalogue there, but
you've got a really nice one.
What's the
other
one?
And then there's called Writings and Conversations, which I'm
so
glad...
So this is our interviews with Barbara.
It's not just words. It's got pictures too. You wouldn't want just words. And
was she around, was she sort of part of Festival of Britain sort of material as well? Was she around?
Yes, very much Festival of Britain. By which time, you know, the whole mythology of her, or the idea that she was wind and weather and divinely British and so on, was established. And she was also major. She was, I think, she was about to be the person with a big work on the side of the new John Lewis store.
Yeah, right.
Which introduced her to many people over the years on the side of the new John Lewis building in Oxford Street. You know, and you've got this almost comical idea of a form with a lot of string in it.
Well, that'll get people over the idea of wind and weathering.
Yes.
Right? Being stuck sort of, you know, on the brow of Oxford Circus. We might have to move on. That is a beautiful way of talking about the Barbara Hepworth show. That's at Tate Britain. Listeners, where are we going to go next? Should we go to Osbert Lancaster, the unveiling
Osbert
of
Lancaster,
the plaque?
The unveiling of the plaque. And it's
he had a big head, Osbert Lancaster. I mean this literally, not metaphorically. I don't know.
He literally had a big head,
didn't
yes.
He
did have a big head, and he was altogether wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much of him from the pocket cartoons. I've got some. And you go beyond that to his illustrations of his own childhood, his illustrations of all sorts of pillar to post, satirical themes of ghastly modern Britain, Kirker 1935. Then you get to his wonderful watercolour, you get it if you know something about him and been allowed to see a lot of his stuff, which I very luckily have. He's wonderful Edward Lear-like watercolours of the Near East and things like that, which are very delicious.
And they're not funny. They're not funny. Where Barbara Hepworth could be funny, Osbert Lancaster can be romantic.
Barbara Hepworth can't really be very funny. She can be a bit funny, and the infant is funny. Osbert Lancaster is funny all the time because he gets all those social details so right. He can also be romantic in that Edward Lear-like way. But then Edward Lear was funny a lot of the time, and then he suddenly does the Middle East and North Africa and those landscapes, and it's wonderful and romantic. And the same thing said here. Anyway, he was, for me, Osbert Lancaster, a great educator about how to be funny in the 30s. What was funny in the 30s?
And the 30s were pretty roaring after the 20s, weren't they, as well? I mean, that was a funny decade. There was a funny decade. There was Woodhouse, and there was Coward, and there were a lot of people that would give you a run for your money if you were a humorist. Right?
He was part of a gang. John Murray, the publisher, had all this gang of clever, funny, all knew each other, people of almost exactly the same age, who most of them were Oxford contemporaries, and were fabulously clever. And they mix up at the edge with the Barbara Hepworth set, but it's overlapping. These are people who were rather chic, collected Victoriana. So, you know, you've got the overlap with John Betjeman. I mean, principally with John Piper, and that whole set of funny, clever, determinedly not heavy, not signalling themselves as major artists, yet in their very Britishness, because they're incredibly British. People think it's rather fey and not trying hard enough, but when it's good, it's wonderful. And what I saw was the unveiling of a plaque on his house in a now very smart Notting Hill Crescent, you know, which had been up in the world, a certain site, a sort of comfortable upper middle class, and gone down in the world, and has now gone up with a bang again. And afterwards, a drinks party in one of those special rear gardens Notting Hill has, behind
a shared
the
one.
House. The shared gardens behind the houses.
Oh, they're lovely.
Lovely. The whole thing was lovely beyond lovely.
And who was presiding over this?
The principal speaker. There were a variety. This is English Heritage doing the plaques. There were a variety of speakers, including his daughter. But the principal speaker was James Knox. And James Knox was the person who did the Osbert Lancaster exhibition round the corner in the Wallace Collection.
Oh, nice.
Which was very nice. And so he knows a lot about him. And there are various other clever speakers of all kinds.
And he was, just finally on Osbert Lancaster, he was an epigrammatical kind of chap.
He was an epigrammatical
Trod in similar shoes to Peter York, perhaps.
Well,
we'll leave a bit of radio silence after that.
Better shoes, I'm afraid.
Osbert Lancaster never seen outside of a pair of John Lobbs, at least, as is Peter York. That is Osbert Lancaster's blue plaque that Peter York was recommending there. It's at 79 Elgin Crescent in Notting Hill. Should we go to Somerset House, Peter?
We go to Somerset House, where there is the Jam.
Just rocking out.
Rocking out at Somerset House, exhibition all about the Jam, with a lovely sort of catalogue. It's not a catalogue, it's a retrospective you can buy. And I thought, oh God, this is expensive and hastily put together. But at the end of the day, I love it because it's all...
It's
all testimonials from a lot of old darlings, most of whom I know. They're all... who were around then and saw and this stuff. The best testimonial comes from Bob Geldof, who said, "The Jam, jammy more like, couldn't stand them. All fake suburban posturing, hand-me-down sounds, tunes, clothes, shoes and attitudes. A sad copy of the gigantic Who." On he goes. And then he says, I love them now. I was wrong, And we weren't very authentic, the Boomtown Rats. The most suspect of them all, for various reasons. But Now he loves them.
There's something nice in the bite a bit there as a cultural commentator as well, having to come back and eat your words, I suppose. Mm. A bit of humble pie.
It's good to be able to eat your words cleverly. This is, I think it's a charming exhibition. I felt
is there
at
any
the
music
time
in it, by the
same. Yes, there's a sort of
there's always that problem. There's always a bit of a cacophony in,
yes,
it, in a museum.
There is some music. There is a stage set up with the authentic, very important in these days, the authentic, I think they're Vox. Marshalls. They're like authentic Marshalls and the drum kit and all that stuff. And them playing on film behind. And people always say, you don't know them unless you've heard them, seen them live. I never did. And people who did hear them live say they were utterly wonderful. And I started thinking they were a bit fraudulent, that they were a bit Johnny come lately. And all this, of course, completely compounded by the fact that Paul Weller is so grumpy.
Yeah.
He's so grumpy.
Do you know what the luxury was on Desert Island Discs?
No.
Kirsty Young, I think it was in the days of Kirsty Young doing it, it was like, and what's your luxury, Paul? And he just went, Seti.
Very good.
It's good, isn't it?
It's very good when you think about it. Yes, A.
Yeah, sit down. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
So, anyway, all that poisoned my view of them. But when you see his schoolbook workings of emergent artisticism in the most absolutely deep-dyed suburban working-class Englishness imaginable, you think, oh yes. And of course, because the original punks were collected by Chelsea people and literally in the case of the Pistols, were put together by Chelsea people in Chelsea and yet presented themselves as the authentic spirit of. And of course, you could say the Jam were the authentic spirit.
I think they are. They're people breaking out of suburbia.
There's
two famous pop stars came out of Woking. The other was Peter Gabriel, so you can go either of two ways.
Yes.
I suppose. And it depends if you went to Charles House or not.
This morning, I was in Beckenham, and I was thinking Barry came from Beckenham.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Well, there you see, the centre of the world. Suburban Kent.
Full circle has been achieved, as ever, by Peter York. We come back as a coda to Beckenham. We were talking there about The Jam, about The Young Idea. That show is on at Somerset House. It's on until the 31st of August. Plenty of time to see that one. Before that, we talked about Barbara Hepworth at the Tate Modern. And before that, or in the middle, we talked about Osbert Lancaster's Blue Plaque, the unveiling of and a fantastic history. There are many books on it. You must buy the best of them. Which is the best of them, I wonder?
Oh, they're all wonderful. All the drawings are wonderful. From pillar to post, his history of cartoon history of architecture, a Drainfleet revealed, which is a history of a mythical sort of home county's town as it gets, in his view, worse and worse and worse with every accretion of street furniture, quotes unquote. Okay. All those things, but it's very, very funny.
And there we have it. That was the Monocle Arts Review with Peter York. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for our music review with Baylen Leonard. But for the time being, thank you very much for tuning in.